What is the Ashman phenomenon? And how do we use this ECG finding, which at times can be invaluable when attempting to determine if the reason for QRS widening is aberrant conduction or not? Two notes before I begin. First, just to realize that I am describing a visual ECG finding with audio, but I'll add links to this ECG blog that fully illustrate the Ashman phenomenon. My second note is that for ease of explanation, I've aimed my comments at assessing the etiology of a single, early occurring wide beat that interrupts an otherwise regular sinus rhythm with narrow QRS complexes. But the principle is the same for applying the Ashman phenomenon to other rhythms. So, to begin with, the easiest way to recognize the Ashman phenomenon is to remember that the funniest looking, that is, the most aberrantly conducted beat, is most likely to follow the longest pause. I'll say it again. The funniest looking beat tends to follow the longest pause. The reason this works is physiologic, and it's all about refractory periods. Let's take the concept of aberrant conduction. By aberrant conduction, we are talking about supraventricular beats that, when they are conducted to the ventricles, manifest a wide QRS complex. We are not talking about patients who in sinus rhythm have a baseline QRS complex that is wide, because those patients have a pre-existing bundle branch block. Instead, we are talking about early occurring beats, beats that are premature because they occur earlier than expected in the cardiac cycle, usually within the ST-T wave segment or right after the T wave. And because these supraventricular beats occur early, they sometimes conduct with QRS widening due to aberrant conduction. There are two types of premature supraventricular beats, which are PACs and PJCs. Because PACs are so much more common than PJCs, I'll be referring to PACs. So if a PAC has a very short coupling interval, that is, the distance from the QRS complex until the PAC is very short, as would be the case if the PAC is seen notching the T wave, then one of three things may happen. If the PAC occurs so early that it falls within the ARP, or absolute refractory period, of the ventricular conduction system, then this very early PAC will be blocked, that is, non-conducted. If the PAC occurs later, say a bit after the T wave, then the PAC may conduct normally with the narrow QRS complex that looks virtually identical to the narrow QRS of normal sinus beats. But if the PAC occurs in between these two time frames, somewhere clearly before the end of the T wave, then this PAC might conduct with aberration if it falls within what is known as the RRP, or relative refractory period, during which time a part, but not all, of the ventricular conduction system is refractory. Now, how long the absolute and relative refractory periods will last is different in every patient, and you cannot predict a specific duration simply by looking at the ECG. But the general concept should be clear. The shorter the coupling interval, the more likely it is that a PAC will fall within the absolute refractory period and be non-conducted or blocked. And the longer the coupling interval is, that is, the later a PAC occurs in the cardiac cycle, the more likely it is that the PAC will be narrow and look like the normal sinus conducted beats. But there is a second important factor that determines whether a PAC will be blocked or conducted with aberrancy with a wide QRS or conducted normally with a narrow QRS that looks identical in morphology to normal sinus beats. This second factor is the preceding R2R interval, because it turns out that the longer the R2R interval is before a QRS complex, the longer the absolute and relative refractory periods will be after that QRS complex. So, for example, when the heart rate slows, the R2R interval gets longer, which means that the duration of the subsequent refractory period will lengthen. As a result, a PAC that may have been conducted normally when the coupling interval was, say, 250 milliseconds, might conduct with aberration at that same coupling interval if the heart rate is slower, because this PAC with the same 250 millisecond coupling interval now falls within the relative refractory period. Final point before putting this all together. To determine if a PAC is likely to conduct normally or with aberration depends on a balance between the length of the preceding R2R interval and how short is the coupling interval of the PAC. I call assessment of this balance cycle sequence comparison. There is no fixed formula for this, and not all rhythms read all of the rules. But appreciation of the balance between these two factors, which are the preceding R2R interval and the length of the PAC coupling interval, goes a long way to understanding which beats are likely to be normally or aberrantly conducted. Back to the Ashman phenomena, for which the funniest looking beat tends to follow the longest pause. This makes sense because if QRS widening consistently occurs for the beat just after this lengthening of the R2R interval, we can now understand that this R2R interval lengthening sets up conditions that predispose to aberrant conduction, because the relative refractory period after the longer R2R interval will be longer. The funniest looking beat tends to follow after the longest pause. So look at the tracing you are working with. It will usually be easy to see when the R2R interval lengthens. The amount of R2R interval lengthening does not necessarily have to be great for it to affect the subsequent length of the next refractory period. Hint: if you want to get good at assessing the likelihood for aberrant conduction, then don't forget to use calipers, since this diagnostic process is based on assessing the balance between preceding R2R intervals and the PAC coupling interval at various points in the tracing. Caveats. I don't like to diagnose aberrant conduction solely on the basis of the Ashman phenomena, because as helpful as the Ashman phenomenon might be, this ECG finding is not perfectly predictive. So I use as many other clues as possible when making my assessment. The best clue to determine if a beat is aberrantly conducted is seeing a premature P wave in front of the white beat. Seeing QRS morphology for the white beat that very much looks like a known form of conduction defect, such as right bundle branch block or one of the hemi blocks, further supports the likelihood of aberrancy. Finally, there should be a reason for aberrant conduction. If the white beat you are looking at occurs late in the cycle, that is well after the end of the T wave, and therefore well after the end of the refractory period, then aberrant conduction is unlikely, because there is no reason for a beat that occurs so late in the cycle to encounter the relative refractory period. I'll end with an advanced point. How good is the Ashman phenomenon in the setting of AFib? Aberrant conduction is more common with AFib, because the ventricular rate is often quite rapid. Therefore, a much greater chance for beats to occur during the relative refractory period. The problem is that because the rate of fib waves is so fast, often between 400 to 600 fib wave impulses per minute, the potential for concealed conduction, that is partial conduction through the atria into the AV node, is great. And this can alter conduction properties enough to affect the balance between the preceding R2R interval and subsequent duration of the next refractory period. Bottom line, I use the Ashman phenomenon in AFib, and much of the time it works. But because of the potential for concealed conduction, realize that the Ashman phenomenon is not as reliable with AFib as it tends to be during sinus rhythm.